Lieutenant of Police calling all cars, attention all cars. A bank robbery at 1522 Santa Fe Avenue. Suspect escaped in a Buick touring car. License unknown. That's all. Rose in prison.
One of the most vital things to public safety is the perfect performance of police cars, fire engines, and other equipment of this type. Much of this performance depends on the gasoline used. Such equipment cannot use a gasoline unless it is absolutely dependable. It must have qualities of quick starting. It must have surging power. There is a gasoline that you can absolutely depend on. That gasoline is Rio Grande Crack with tetraethyl. It has proved its case in the fact that throughout the great Southwest, where Rio Grande products are sold, more police cars, fire engines, motorcycles, ambulances, and other emergency equipment are powered with Rio Grande crack with tetraethyl than all other brands combined. You can buy this same fine gasoline at any Rio Grande station. From Chief James E. Davis of the Los Angeles Police Department. Chief Davis.
Good evening, friend. How many times have you resented the man on the beat who told you to move along because you were parking in front of a fire plug? How many times have you personally taken a belligerent attitude against the police officer who, during his duty, drove up beside you and gave you a ticket because you sped through a safety zone or drove pell-mell through busy traffic as if you were going to a third alarm fire and the burning house was your own? Tonight, I bring you a story which I hope will have a beneficial effect upon you and make you conscious, as a citizen of Los Angeles, of how these men in blue and khaki, whether they be pounding a beat, riding in a traffic radio car, or cruising throughout the city on their motorcycles, are constantly protecting your life and your property, even unto death. Tonight's story should teach you two great fundamental truths. First, that the men under my command are fearless and courageous, alert to do their duty and unselfish in placing their lives on the altar of duty. Secondly, that your police department has made and means to keep this city clean of Eastern gangsters and vicious criminal types. Written into this story is the grim death of a traffic officer who fell mortally wounded because he was part of this great law enforcement body dedicated to a 24-hour-a-day warfare against crime. Likewise, this story discloses the heroism of a motorcycle officer too faithful to his trust of protecting the public to flinch even when his body was riddled with enough bullets to frighten the average criminal to death. Listen intently. Let this thrilling story impress you that it is your job as a citizen to cooperate with your police department in order that its routine work can be made easier and that it can concentrate upon the great forces of evil. Professor Lindsley will go on with the story.
It is the middle of August, 1925. Four men are seated in a stuffy day coat as the Chicago Limited clangs across the yard and slowly rattles over the siding onto Alameda Street.
Yeah, fellas, it won't be long now. Let's kill the rest of this bottle before we put into the depot.
Hey, what's the matter, Purdy? You better lay off of that stuff.
Tell him, folks. You're telling me? You know, this is the last bottle the good Chicago bootleg gets in the outfit. If we get into L.A. on this job, so we'll all have to drink that 75-cent a pint poison they settled out there.
Oh, yeah? Let me tell you something. Anytime this baby drinks bum liquor with all them juicy banks in Los Angeles waiting to be bumped, you're crazy.
No telling, man.
Now, listen, you guys. Don't get it too ambitious. Remember, we're here to get to the door to spring a three-string at the peak. And the sooner we do it, the quicker peak she's going to be on the open air.
Well, but why did we pick on Los Angeles? This ain't any town. The United States with banks in it.
You're telling me that, Rudy? But I'm going to tell you something. We ain't in any no good standing the back of the sky, see? After that hold up at the Lenox Hotel. And this suburb ain't nothing but overgrowing the village with a bunch of them moving to pick the cops. Ah, it's going to be a fight.
Yeah? So you think the L.A. cops is easy, huh?
Sure of it easy. They ain't never bucked up against any of the real guys like us from the East. It's going to be like a taking a candy bullet to it.
The Chicago boys work fast. In 2 days, they have staked out the job they intend to pull, and they have also acquired some lady friends. The next night finds them entertaining their companions in a top sewer parlor.
Well, how you doing, babe?
I think I'm going to live. Hey, talk to me, Silver. I want some more mushrooms.
Sure thing, Bertie Hymer never refused a good-looking game nothing.
Hey!
What's the matter?
You put it in a nickel, music is coming out.
I say, big boy, why don't you take us someplace where they have an orchestra? We want to dance, don't we, Betty?
Sure, take us where we can dance. Will you, handsome?
No, not tonight, but a little short on dough.
Oh, yeah. Just a bunch of cheesecakes, huh?
Oh, yeah, no cheesecakes. Tomorrow night we'll tell you how stupid I'll say. We're going to pull it.
Pipe it down, buddy. Pipe it down. If he's the dame, I don't know how I got to speak. It ain't no reason for us to go into a confession, huh?
Ah, don't get that way. We were just kidding.
Yeah, wait till I stick a dick in the piano.
Music
and
everything.
Come on, baby, let's dance.
Say, I sure must be stuck on your hands.
You
get up and try to dance
to that racket. Come on, let's go. Okay, you're a good little
sport,
Betty.
And the morning night, I'm going to take the family.
Yeah, how about you dancing with me, too,
sir? Yeah, sure. Well, that's all this money you guys are
going to
have tomorrow. I suppose that's the line
of
all of us, huh?
Oh, where's all this money coming from?
Are we coming?
Who cares? Are you a policeman?
Yay! Come like a Los Angeles cop.
He can't be here all night. He's got an important case
about it. It is 11 o'clock on the morning of August 22nd, 1925. The Hellman Bank on Santa Fe Avenue is humming with mid-morning activity.
How many ones did you say, Mrs. Sawyer?
10, please, and the rest in 5.
Right. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh,
five. That's the matter.
Oh! Give me your hands up. You clerks, if you want to live, just give away some of those alarm devices.
You can't get away with this, my man. What the idea? And go see, like
that. Let's go. I'll plug you as an example.
All right, now don't start a shooting until you have to, Rudy.
Now, come on. All you guys are behind the corner. You get into the tank. Now, come on and step out or I'll burn you down. Now, Bertie, you get into the customer down on the floor. And you pick up at the door.
Okay, down on the floor, all of them.
Me too.
Yes, you too. Hey, you there in the brown suit, don't you try to pull nothing. Down on the floor, all of you. All right, Ed. You give your guns to the rest of them, huh?
Oh, don't fight that gun at me. I'm going to get
it. All right. You do anything but cut your mouth. Hey, buddy, you got to the door?
Yeah, I got everything to do. Now we're leaving. Everybody stay put till we get out of the door or we'll blast you. Come on, guys.
All right. All right, the pilot. I'm going to take the wheel. What'd I tell you? Just like you're taking a candy from a kid.
Bank robbers pile into a large black touring car waiting for them outside, motor running. The driver presses the accelerator to the floor, and the powerful car leaps out into the stream of traffic on Santa Fe Avenue. A second later, one of the officials of the bank commandeers another car and follows in mad pursuit. Several blocks away at Santa Fe and 8, Officer Oscar Bayer, seated on his motorcycle, passes the time of day with a friend.
What are you doing down in this end of town, Oscar? Nothing ever happens down here, and the traffic's too dense for speeding.
Yeah, I get you right, Mac, but orders are orders. I sure wish something would happen to break the monotony, though.
Well, you got your wrist, lad. Look at that madman weaving through the traffic.
Huh? He's as good as got a ticket right now.
You better hurry. That bird's moving.
I'll get him at a traffic signal.
There's another one. Go get him, Oscar.
Just watch.
The police motorcycle slices ahead of the pursuer's car. And weaving in and out of the dense traffic, Oscar Bayer streaks down Santa Fe Avenue after the fleeing bandits. The black outlaw steps on two feet. Bayer 50 yards behind him. The drops of unlimited automatic pursuit of office tires, two gun barrels are first cut into the rear window of the black car, and something hard and soft hits Bayer on the chest. He's more a square soldier. Bayer straightens it. Trips out his service revolver. The bandits return the fire. Bayer zigzags in an attempt to throw off the bandit's aim. On down 7 feet, the gun barrel weighs at 50 miles an hour. Going past intersection, Bayer shouts to traffic policemen who take the commodore passing cars and join in the chase. Bayer enters his gun. And jamming it under his left arm, he reloads his right hand for the rear to the left. The bandit car is momentarily halted by construction work for the man who runs out to the street to warn him around the barriers receives a bullet through his hat. The San Pedro Street, a fixed field of traffic going in the opposite direction, draws the bandit up short in the stoplight. Traffic officer Wiley E. Smith, attracted by Bayer's cool siren, turns around as the bandit car comes to a screeching stop. Before Bayer can shout a warning to him, a shotgun spits death in the bandit's car. Smith sways, drops to the ground, then painfully climbs to his knees, slips out his gun, and starts firing at the bandits as Bayer joins him, his revolver spitting fire into the black touring car. Motorists, waiting at the stoplight, hastily scramble to the bottom of their car. Bayer, blind with pain, sickened from the bullet, his body has stopped, and the dying Smith are joined by four other officers who come up on the commandeered car. As Bayer steps from the cover of a parked car for a moment, one of the gunmen jumping to the black automobile aims at him. The guns of three of the policemen snuff out the light. Two more bandits jump from the car and streak for a nearby parking station. The officers cut off the escape of the fourth robber and order him to surrender.
Drop that gun, mister.
You're all locked up.
That's plenty of help. You got him in the arm, will you?
Yeah. Yeah, let's get the cuffs on him.
Hey, you haven't got him yet, you
dirty. Nothing like a gun butt to quiet him. I'll have to put the cuffs on him.
Yeah. Here comes Stevenson. The last thing I saw of him was that those other two guys.
How'd they make out, Stevenson?
They got away. I hung on to them until I ran out of ammunition. Say, Pierce, you're hit.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to my sleep and something tells me I'm going to stay there till we get this bird to the station.
Here comes the ambulance now. There, you better get in too.
No, sir. I'm going to the hospital under my own power.
$19,000 is found in a bullet-riddled satchel in the bandit's car as a private automobile carries Officer Smith to the hospital. And the ambulance rushes the wounded bandit to medical help. Inspector Finlinson, attempting to get coherent statements of the case from the excited officers, meets Oscar Bayer in the hospital corridor.
Oh, here you are, Bayer. I've been looking every place for you.
Oh, I've been right here, Inspector. I'm waiting for word about Wiley. You heard anything?
He's pretty bad, Oscar. Shot through the lungs. He's losing blood fast.
Oh, poor Wiley. Say, he raptured him down in cold blood. How's the guy we brought in?
Never mind him. I want to know how you are.
Oh, I'm okay. I just got a few little scratches.
You should have reported to the doctor before this.
Oh, I'm all right, Inspector. Honestly.
Well, I want the doctor's assurance of that.
Yeah, but it's silly, sir.
It doesn't look silly from the size of that blood stain on your side.
Where? Oh, that. I hadn't noticed that before.
All right, that settles it. You're seeing the doctor with me right now. Come on.
Get in here.
Here's the bear, Doctor. He seems to think he's a human target. Look him over, will you?
Certainly. All right, young man. Right over here. Slip your uniform off.
Yes, sir.
Oh!
Just a scratch, bear. Yes. Come here, bear. Yes. Let me help you, Barry.
Oh.
There we are.
Now, let's get a look at you. Hey, young fella, you must have been born under a lucky star.
What do you mean?
One bullet headed for your heart was stopped by your bad. Look at this.
Jeez.
And another, if it could have killed you, is embedded in your notebook here. See that?
Yeah, that was close. You know, I remember now, feeling that hit me. It sort of knocked the wind out of me for a moment.
Now, let me see. One, two, three flesh wounds. I'll get a dressing on them.
Are they serious, Doctor?
No, but it's certainly a miracle that they only changed the flesh. Any one of them would have killed him if they'd have been an inch nearer the center of his body.
Well, there you are, Doctor. I can't get rid of him. Only the good die young. Doctor, while you're bandaging Bear, I want to talk to this wounded man. That is, if he's well enough to talk.
Yes, I think he'll be all right, Inspector. He's in the next room, right through that door.
Thanks. And, Doctor, see the Bear here does what you tell him. If you don't make him go to bed, he'll be out riding his beat this afternoon.
Well, don't worry. I'll see that doesn't happen.
Well, young fellow, how are you?
What's it to you? Who are you? Anna?
Who do you suppose?
Dick.
Well, yes, it is a police officer.
Yeah? Well, what do you want?
What's your name?
Smith, Jonathan.
Rather unusual name, isn't it?
Oh, don't make a smart attack, Cop. What do you want?
Well, I want to find out who your partners were and your little deal this morning.
I don't know.
You don't know, eh?
That's what I said. I'm only meeting him in the Pershing Square yesterday. I don't know what he's doing.
Very, very interesting.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's to the fact. He made a date to meet me this morning near the bank. I don't know that he was going to make him sit up until this happened.
You ought to be a little more careful about the companions you take. They may get you into trouble sometime.
Oh, yeah. You're the wisest guy, aren't you?
Huh? Remains to be seen. But I can tell you this, John Smith. Our fingerprint man will be over here in a half hour, and it won't be long until we find out just how wise a guy you are.
Fingerprinting of the dead bandit and his wounded companion identify them as Rudolph Franter and Anthony Caspar, respectively. Both had served time in the Illinois State Penitentiary of Joliet for bank robbery. And Rudolph Franter had also served four other sentences. The warden of Joliet Prison furnishes complete criminal records of both men. And in addition, sends the Los Angeles Police Department fingerprints and photographs of Ed Franter, brother of the dead bandit. A checkup of the acquaintances of the gang brings the two short-time lady friends of the men into the investigation.
We understand you girls were acquainted with Ed and Rudolph Franta and Tony Casper.
Mm-hmm. We never heard of them.
Well, they may have given you different names. Here are the pictures. You recognize them? You can speak freely. All we want is an identification. We haven't got anything on you.
You're damn right you haven't.
Well, do they look like anyone you ever saw before?
Sure, we were out with them one night. Not a minute, please. Did you get that wrong? Sure they did. I'm not going to get into any jam on account of them.
Well, go on.
Well, we were out with them. They said they were from Chicago, and they were going to pull a big job the next day.
Was that the day the Hellman Bank was robbed?
Yeah, I guess it was. See, that's right, Ella. Remember one of them made a crack about having a date with his banker the next morning?
I don't know anything about it. I'm through with you. Showing a gusto cop.
You got us all wrong, sister. All we want is a corroborative identification.
Well, I don't care what you want. You're a copper, and you ain't going to get nothing out of me.
With his record from Joliet and the further identification of his girlfriend, Caspar admits his participation in the robbery, but refuses to give any information regarding the two missing bandits. Pictures and fingerprints of Ed Franter are printed by the thousands and sent to every police station and sheriff's office in the United States. More than 2 months passed. And then one November afternoon at a busy corner of the Loop in Chicago, patrolman Frank Griffin, off duty and in plain clothes, recognizes a man answering the description of Ed Franter talking to two other men. As Griffin approaches the group, the two men flee.
But Franco reaches for a gun in his hip pocket. Griffin seizes Franco, pinning his arm to his body.
Don't be a snap, Father. Look at that crowd. Don't start anything.
Well, what's the big idea?
Quiet, listen. They want to talk to you down at headquarters. If you come along quiet, they won't handcuff you.
Yeah, but I...
You raise hell to try to get away. This crowd may be tougher on you than I'll be.
Well, okay.
Come on, then.
Might tell me, Griffin, what the big idea is.
Nothing much, only the captain wants to talk to you.
What about?
A bank robbery in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles? I've never been in Los Angeles.
Well, you can explain all that to the captain. I'm through with you when I get you down to headquarters.
Yeah, how come you're in plain clothes, Griffin? You was in harness a couple of days ago.
Yeah, well, I got promoted.
Yeah?
Sure.
Can you get on the inside now, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
There's this Al Shields on the corner. He's still in the harness.
Yeah, but you'll get a break, too, one of these days.
Hello, Frank. Who's your pal?
Joe, this fellow's wanted for murder. There's a gun in his pocket. Get it.
Okay. Now, I'll lie you, though. Give me the bracelet, Joe.
What the...
Ed. I'm still a harness boy, but I happen to be off duty right now and without a gun.
Good job, Frank. I got the SOS you flashed with your eyes.
Boy, was I nervous. I thought I'd never run into anybody.
Well, I'll be a platoon here. I could have got away all the time.
Oscar Bayer, now promoted to the detective force, accompanies Captain James Bean to Chicago. And the two officers bring Edward Franta back to Los Angeles to face trial on charges of first-degree murder and robbery. In December 1925, Caspar, now sufficiently recovered from his wound, and Franta go on trial before a jury of 12 women, the first all-female jury in the history of California. For 83 hours, the ladies of the jury argue the case, 11 standing for hanging, and the 12th set upon for acquittal. Finally, at a few minutes before 12 on New Year's Eve, they compromise on life in prison. With New Year's bells ringing and whistles screeching, the jury returns its verdict. The attorney for the defense leaps to his feet.
Your Honor, this is a miscarriage of justice. I will appeal this decision.
I wish you would. I believe that a second trial would result in these men getting what they actually deserve. They should be sentenced to hang.
Well, in that case, will the court permit me a moment to speak to my client?
Yes, certainly.
Your Honor, upon further consideration, I and my clients are prepared to accept the verdict of the jury and the sentence of the court.
And shortly afterwards, Ed Franta and Tony Caspar are en route to Folsom Prison. The fourth bandit was never apprehended, but police vigilance has not relaxed in the search for him. Oscar Bayer, in reward for his bravery, received a citation from Chief Davis, a promotion to the Detective Bureau, and a share of a $2,300 reward given by the Hellman Bank and the California Bankers Association. This brave officer, who had escaped death many times before he foiled the bank robbers, who had battled with German U-boats in the English Channel during the war, was a member of the Pursuit Squadron 478 of the Army Reserve Force. Having learned to pilot an airplane following the war, he sold the first ship he owned, an old Jenny, to a boy in Alhambra, who killed himself crashing into high tension wires. Bayer's second ship ran out of gas over the downtown police station and crashed at Vermont and Third. Bayer escaped with a few scratches. Unafraid, Bayer buys a monocoque, and one bright sunshiny day in 1929, he takes off from Rogers Airport, accompanied by Officer Plessinger, for a short hop to Clover Field in Santa Monica. A few minutes later, the glistening red ship drops on the Clover Field in a perfect three-point landing. And Bayer is greeted by a friend whom he has been teaching to fly.
Hello, Johnson.
Hello, Oscar. 12 days of flying, huh?
Yeah. You know my pal, Pussinger?
Oh, hello. Yeah.
Well, what about it, Johnson? You want to take another lesson?
Sure. You know, Pussinger, this guy can teach me more about handling a stick in 5 minutes than any of these other birds can in a day.
Yeah, Oscar knows his stuff, all right.
Come on, you guys. This battery's going to my head. Come on, let's go, Johnson.
Okay.
So long, Puss. Be back in a little while.
Okay, Oscar. So long.
Little mechanical red bird skims across the green of the air drone, sees the top of the grass, and falls toward the heavens. Circling effortlessly, it is soon 1,000 feet in the air. Below lies the panorama of Southern California, a glimmering jewel in the noonday sun. The mountains to the east, the desert beyond shimmering in the east. Below the matching blue of Santa Monica Bay, half circles of a throbbing white scallop of the beach. Toward the west, the mysterious peak of the Channel Islands. A day to dream. A day to soar. A shout goes up from the field. The monarch who falls to his right turns over, drops into his chin, hurtles earthward. Down! Down!
Oscar Bayer 2 days later. 116 motorcycle policemen from all over Los Angeles County accompanied the procession. Aeroplanes flew overhead. We fired 3 volleys above the grave, and the plane swooped low, dropping wreaths of flowers on the last we saw of Oscar Bayer, an officer and a gentleman, a fearless enemy, a faithful friend, truly one of the finest. Thank you, Chief Davis. Modern motor cars are built to give you almost perfect performance. But you can't expect them to deliver it with inferior gasoline. To get the very best out of your car, why not try a tank full of Rio Grande cracked gasoline with tetraethyl? This is the gasoline that delivers millions of miles of dependable service to police cars, fire engines, and other emergency equipment here in the great Southwest. If you want the truth about your car, Rio Grande Crack will tell you whether you need repairs or a change in gasoline. Next time you need oil, why not try Sinclair Opaline? This blended oil is extra refined, giving longer life. Also, it is sold only in tamper-proof extra major cans. It sells for only 25 cents. For a better oil, at the price of cheap bulk oil, insist on Sinclair Opaline.
All cars, attention all cars, cancellation broadcast 30 regarding a holdup. 3 suspects now in custody. That's all. Roll the clip.
This episode of Calling All Cars was obtained from the official police records by Madeline Kelly and was adapted for radio and produced by William M. Roach. This is Cedric Lindsley saying good night for the Rio Grande Oil Company.